Welcome to Cloudlandia, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson. You know, I rehearsed that for about 5 minutes before you come on the call. Mr. Jackson. Mr. Jackson.
It's all in the inflection. How do you do it?
Yeah. You got to be cool. You got to be cool, but unique but cool.
This year.
Well, welcome to Cloudlandia, as always.
Yes, indeed. Things moving. Things are lots of action on all fronts.
What have you got?
No, I kind of tried to find interesting thinkers, interesting speakers on various subjects, and I've come across this. He's a lawyer. He's a professor, and he's at Columbia University in New York City. Tim Wu, W-U, and he's written some really, really interesting books, sort of history books, on the information technology, starting with telegraph in the 1840s and bringing it right up to the to the 2020s. And he's established sort of a model of what happens when a new communication technology or an information technology that kind of adds up to the same thing and says that it always starts off with some sort of, tinkerer who creates something. Somebody who's pulling around with stuff in their garage or their basement, and they create something, and they try to make do with it, and they put out what they're doing. And when it starts, a lot of people catch on. And for example, he said in 1910, he moves it up to telephone, and he said, in 1910, anybody who had about 10 neighbors who wanted to talk to each other could create a telephone system. The technology was available. All you had to do was wire everybody's house. And, it took a little bit of electricity to create a system. And so he said, everybody was doing it. Clubs were doing it. Churches were doing it. Towns were doing it in farm country. But he said, people who have that experience, really see the potential, but they just become unhappier and unhappier with the small scale of what is being provided to them. And, to a certain extent, it's unreliable, it's unpredictable. And people want the new capability, but they want it guaranteed, they want it big, and they want it to go forever. And he says that grows it into huge corporations, which eventually become monopolies. And he's just got this pattern, and he says it goes over and over and over again. And he said we're right now with the internet, he says we're about halfway to the worst of the monopoly situation, according to his analysis. But it's very interesting, very interesting. He's very charming. If you ever see him, if you go to YouTube, he has a lot of YouTube.
Oh, I love that. Okay. I love to have, like, you're like me. I love to have great thinkers. Like, that's when I discovered, I liked, Jordan Peterson when I first discovered him, kind of. Yeah. And it's interesting. It's funny. You and I have kind of.
I mean, this is Cloudlandia, where I can just talk about something and I say, just go to YouTube. There's about 10 of them right in a row at various places. But our discussion group that I have in Toronto going on 20 years now, I send out one of his books. Or will be sent out on Monday. But what I try to do, because people are different, I'm a reader. I like information-packed books. I like historical books, but not everybody does. So what I do is I'll just give a paragraph of why I think it's really worth, understanding this person and really important to discuss his ideas. And then I send a really good, the best book review, maybe about 2-page book review of the book. And then I sent out a video of him. I said, if you just don't want to read it all, just watch and listen to the video for about 40 minutes. And that way everybody shows up feeling that they, that they're prepared.
I used to love in your global when you were never reminded of that, but that was a curated information before that was really a thing.
Yeah, so you know, I never got very, very much feedback until the quarter when I decided not to do it anymore. And everybody said, well, I loved it. I said, well, I never heard from you while I was doing it. So, you're a little bit late.
Right.
You know? But nobody really responded to it. They got it. And I don't know. I mean, I had no proof that people were reading it or listening.
Right.
To it. So I said, I'm a ADD 10 quick start. You know, I got to have feedback. I go crazy or I go off the reservation.
Right. I get it.
Yeah. But what I like is the going back, I really love history. I mean, I just like knowing where things come from and, how things developed. And then I like having right next to me Google. I have the book. Usually I'm doing it on Kindle. I'm reading the book on Kindle. And then, I come across something. I said, I'd like to go a little bit deeper in that. And I just go to YouTube. And, there might be two or three different YouTube things that.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I go to Wikipedia and just get a basic handle. If it's not too controversial, Wikipedia is really good. If it's controversial, like it's got political implications, then I find them only about 50% useful because they definitely favor one side over the other. And, but you have to filter that out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started this week, Dan, yesterday, actually, mostly to. I was thinking about something happened this week where we're taking snapshots of time, and it was interesting. I have a friend who's turning 36 this week, or turned 36, and then we were just thinking back that was 2002 for me, and I just moved into my house here in Valhalla, and taking a snapshot of what was like going on in my life in 2002 and what was kind of going on in the world at that time. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning when the internet was really starting to be something. Google AdWords was just released. You could buy keyword advertising, and I rode that wave with Stop Your Divorce, and with our money making websites. We were very early on both of those, and so you have an advantage that we had a good long period of time when we were kind of early into the environment. And of course, you look at where it is now, and it's almost evolved unrecognizably. You could see how it would go, but 2021 is a different core sample. If we're taking the digital density of what is available now, the context of what I was thinking this through yesterday was I had a really interesting conversation to 36, and we were thinking about looking back for 2002 when I was.
No, I got all that. I got all that. You talked through. You talked through. You know the. You know everything AdWords. You had done, but you were just about. Yep. You were just about to say something that had occurred to you.
Oh, okay.
In getting ready for this conversation.
Okay, great. Yeah. Okay. So that getting ready for our conversation, I thought yesterday about how when you take like snaps in time like that, what about what if you and I were in charge of creating welcome kits for new, you know, new citizens of Cloudlandia when you decide to make that migration into Cloudlandia? If you're coming from, you're new to it from history, it's just not back in. And I was overwhelmed by just the entry level advantages that you have with your citizenship in Cloudlandia. Starting with, you know, the entry level, of course, is your smartphone. You got your iPhone, you say. Your iPhone is your passport to Cloudlandia. If you've got the iPhone, you're in. Now, when you just think about what this opens up to you, you know, for no extra, I'm not going to say free because you've got the cost of, the basic cost of citizenship in Cloudlandia is whatever your cost for the phone and your data plan, right? That with that, you've got the basic access to Cloudlandia. And when you start thinking about the hardware alone, it was amazing to me. Have you ever seen these ads, Dan, that they show, like a Radio Shack ad from the 80s with or 90s with all of the electronics that are for sale at Radio Shack, like a video camera or a regular camera or a tape recorder and all of the things that are just built right in to the iPhone. That's just your toolkit that you get access to, right? As you're navigating control to Cloudlandia. But then along with it, every citizen gets a radio station. You get a TV network, if you want, station, network, whatever. Free broadcasting of video, audio. Publish as much text as you want. A free and instant direct contact with every other citizen of Cloudlandia with the push of a button. Or you can gather them in groups by video or audio. And it's just, wow. You know, when you start to really like think it through, the advantages that everybody has to create whatever you want. I mean, it's just hard for me to even fathom kind of organizing the thoughts around this, you know? Could you imagine if when people got off the Mayflower, like you compare the other big migration that we'll talk about is people coming to the brave new world here of America. And when they landed, first of all, you had to, you know, get on a ship that may or may not make it. And you had to do a long journey to get here. But when you get off, nothing. I mean, it's pretty like it's overwhelming.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Yeah, but you know, here I'll just introduce another thought here.
Yeah,
and that is, I think that you do really great in Cloudlandia,
Yeah.
Because you were also a focused, productive person in the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I know all the, you know, the endless technological capabilities, you know, that are available to me on my phone. But actually, I only use my phone for two reasons: to talk to Dean Jackson.
Yes.
And to access my happy device that, you know, the mood regulator. I don't use my phone for anything else. I use my computer for an awful lot of things. You know?
Right.
In other words, yes. My preference is actually having a much bigger screen and
your MacBook.
And I'm used to the I'm used to the computer. You know, I've got 30 years under my belt. But what I'm really noticing is, you know, that there's a lot of people who have all these digital capabilities. Okay.
Yes.
But you and I appreciate them more than people who were born since 1992.
Yes.
And that's the biggest thing that I noticed, because they don't know there's another way previously to doing things.
Right.
And they actually didn't develop some thinking schools in the slow world.
Right.
They were born into the fast world where, you know, everything's fast. I mean, if everything's fast, then nothing's fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's really interesting. You and I are appreciating that, because we had established capabilities and opportunities and had success before these tools were available to us.
Mm-hmm.
So they find, for example, they do tests of teenagers with search engines. So they'll get 30 teenagers with, you know, they have a problem to solve, or they have to find something, they have to accumulate information.
Yes.
And then they have an equal number of 50-year-olds who understand search engines and everything else, and they see who's fastest at getting the exact information that you're looking for. And the 50-year-olds just clean clock. None of the teenagers can stay on a track to actually find something, because they get distracted. The 50-year-olds are just looking for what they're looking for, and they don't get distracted by all the other stuff.
Well, we grew up
the 50-year-old,
the Dewey Decimal, the card catalog.
Well, the 50-year-olds had solving problems in another world,
right? Okay?
And so they appreciate the speed with which they can do this new thing, but they're not going to get sidetracked in the same way. So my next book, the book I'm working on right now, is called Your Attention, Your Property. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you know, just to go back to my model, I've reserved my iPhone use to Dean Jackson, you know, and to a particular app.
Yes.
And outside of that, they don't have my attention for anything else they want me doing on the iPhone. And
I was thinking about that. I just
want to talk about this. So this came up in one of the workshops last week, and somebody said, "Well, you know, you're just missing out on a lot." I said, "I'm not, because I have human beings interfacing between me and other people's attempt to engage me."
You're right.
In the mail, by telephone, email, you know, and everything like that. I've got somebody who picks up on it for me, but it doesn't take up any of my time. And, you know, over a period of a year or 2 years of working with these individuals, they kind of are about 98% good at not letting something come through to me. So,
right.
So, but, you know, that's the way I did it in the old world, too. I mean, in the slow world. So what I'm looking at is your, you know, people say, I've got, did you see this? Did you see this? Did you see this? Did you see this? And I said, well, actually, I didn't. I screened it out. And they said that, well, but what have I missed? Now, the stuff I was missing 3 months ago, how important is the stuff that I missed?
Right.
And they said, oh, no, 3 months ago. It's a new world. I said, yeah. So I didn't miss anything. But it didn't. But it used up none of my attention. It used up a lot of your attention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was thinking about that with, Joe.
And you're good. Paul. I mean, you're good about that too. You know, I mean, you basically pay attention to things that you've lined up as important.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't see you being overwhelmed by your interaction with Cloudlandia.
No, the one of the things that I was saying about you yesterday or this week when I was talking with my friend was that how you have guarded your attention, you've guarded your time, and you've cut things off that are like TV, and you know, like that. When you look at that, just the things that make the things that suck your time like a black hole kind of thing, right? That when you're actually not, you know, hooked into the dopamine multiplier, which is really what all of this endless surfing could be, is you. How much time do you think that you got back when you gave up TV?
Well, it's 3 years. It'll be 3 years in July. And it's 800 hours a year. So I got back.
Yeah.
You know, it's an average. I just took I just went back and looked at a schedule for a month. And I basically, figured it out. What was a month's worth, weekends and everything
else? Typically, what would you
I was thought watch it was about
kind
15,
of things, yeah.
I thought it was about 15 hours a week, and it's I'll watch one of the talk show, I really liked Fox with Bret Baier, and that came on at that was like 7 o'clock came on, and it was an hour long, so there's there's 5 hours there. And then I check, we'd go to Netflix some evenings and we'd follow a series.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was always about a half hour longer than we were intending.
Right. Right.
So we get hooked into something.
Yeah.
Something. So I would say about 2.5 hours, 5 days a week.
Yeah.
So you're up to, to 12 and a half hours. And then I'd watch a game or something on Sundays, baseball game, football game, basketball game, and everything. And so I said, it's probably 15 hours, probably 15 hours. And so times 50 weeks is 52 weeks is pretty close to 800, 800 hours. And so I got that back. And then I got the other bonus of no travel for the last year. So.
Wow!
Compared to 3 years ago, I've got about 1,200 hours to work with. I mean, divide that. Let's say it's a 10-hour working day. It's 120 working days. So
it is really. I mean, yeah, it's something. I mean, it's something where if you can, it's like your. It's almost like the magic key you often talk about. The magic of living in Canada and having most of your income come from the US or global, you're earning in US dollars and spending in Canadian, that there's so much stuff going on in Cloudlandia, but you're not paying that tax. You've got your slow time, mainland. Time.
Yeah, we had to educate our accounting firm, our global accounting firm, that handles Britain, Canada, and the U.S. that as far as the regulation of government is concerned, when we're doing a workshop on Zoom, the workshop is happening nowhere.
Right. Yeah. How does that handle? How do you handle?
What I mean is, they say, well, you know, when you get the money for the workshop, you're taxed. I said, well, that's true. But before, when we did a workshop, let's say in Santa Monica, the city of Santa Monica taxes us. The county of Los Angeles taxes us. The state of California taxes us, and the U.S. government taxes us. Mm-hmm. And then we have all sorts of regulations regarding, you know, the performance of our the performance of our workshop. And for example, in New York City, when we tried to do workshops in New York City, if we did it in a hotel, we had to have a union member or the hotel union in the room mm-hmm. with us when we were doing the workshop. And if we wanted to move our boxes, our people couldn't move the boxes. Only the union member could move the boxes. That's why I talk about being taxed. In the mainland, you get taxed on space. You get, there's a lot of spatial taxes and regulations that are eliminated once you go to Zoom.
Yeah, I remember when you did an event at the Waldorf Astoria
mm-hmm.
In New York. Yeah, I don't know why I was in town for that, but I was.
I mean, great place and everything, but enormous taxes, and then. Mm-hmm. You know, and then people have to drive and park to get there, and that's a tax. And, you know, I mean, it's a time tax, it's a money tax. The mainland is just filled up with regulations and taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we just, I'll tell you a little event that happened in the space of about 3 days. Canada's really locked down again because they didn't get the vaccinations in play fast enough that they could create some herd immunity, you know, the term herd mm-hmm. immunity. So they're just getting hit as if it's brand new with a variation of COVID. So all the hospitals in Ontario and some of the other provinces, they're right back to the first month of COVID with the seriousness of the outbreak and everything. Man. And this is just because we have abysmal leadership in our gated community, the big gated community called Canada. People say, what's Canada like? I said, well, this is the way you have to think about it. Canada is America's biggest gated community. I bet it's your place. You have to check in at the gate, don't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, same thing with Canada. You have to check in at the gate, and they're suspicious if you don't know somebody that's in the community. I mean, if somebody came and, asked for somebody in your community, they'd say, if they were suspicious at all, they'd say, well, let me phone them and see if they're expecting you.
Right.
You have to do the same thing with Canada. It's just bigger. The residents of this gated community called Canada are pretty mild mannered. They're pretty docile, you know, and they've had a big growth of pot smoking over the last 2 or 3 years, and they're not armed, you know. It's a rather tranquil place. It's kind of a tranquil place, but they pushed it too far, and this was on Friday, and they announced, and this is the premier of Ontario, and this is the federal, you know, this is the mayor of Toronto, and that says starting Monday, police can do instant spot checks on anybody. They can stop you on the sidewalk, they can stop your car, and they can have you explain why you're out, why you're not
home. Oh my goodness! Home.
Wow. And,
so that's brand new. I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, that's on Friday. So I said, anyway, I went downtown yesterday, as I always do on Saturday, and my limousine driver, he was talking about it. He says, yeah, he says, he says, thank God we're an essential service. And I said, yeah, I said, quite frankly, I said, I'm almost 50 years in Toronto. So June 5th, I'm here 50 years. That's the day I arrived in 1971. And I said, I have a feeling that they've gone too far and this whole thing's going to blow up in their face. It's going to blow up in the politician's face. And he said, yeah, I do. He said, this is, and it blew up. Apparently the police in no uncertain terms told the government officials, under no circumstances are any of their police people going to be stopping people on the street or stopping cars. That's not the role of the police. And if the politicians would like to stop people, the politicians can get on their old work clothes and they can go down and they can stop people and see if
that's
they
what the police said
next.
to the police.
Yeah, they didn't even, politicians didn't even, you know, they didn't even
run that by the police.
Know.
Yeah.
No, they didn't run the police, you know, had the police do it. And I said, that kind of tells you where the line is. It just kind of tells you where the line is. And Canadians got pushed across the line. And I said, you know, you could get wiped out at the polling booth just because of what you did in the last 3 days. People will remember this. Babs was down walking on the boardwalk, because we're right down on the lake here. And she ran into our next door neighbors who are really, really great people. And they said, this is horrible what they're doing. They said, we've never had anything horrible like this happen to us ever in Canada, what has just been announced. And I said, yep. And I think they pushed it across the line.
Yeah, I had a friend who literally they lived in Canada in the last 2 weeks, sold their house and rented a jet and took his family out. And they're just arrived in Florida yesterday. And now they're done. They're done.
Yeah.
It's just too they went too far. Just like just the words you said. That's too much. We're out.
Yeah,
we're out.
Yeah, and I think that it's kind of like a little thing. I mean, it seems like a little thing because there's been rulings from on high for a solid, solid year. But it's just one ruling too far, and now everybody's saying, "I can't believe what's happening," and now everybody's waking up. And generally speaking, if you're a political leader, you don't want the people to wake up. And start focusing on you.
It's really wild.
And the papers have been going deep and just how abysmal and how at fault the political leaders are, not taking it seriously in the first time, not having their act together. And then fooling around with which virus, or which vaccination are we going to get, and everything like that. And so they have this survey of, kind of more or less developed countries, and it's like 50 countries in the world that are more or less, they've got decent healthcare systems and they've got decent government. And Canada's number 45 out of 50. It's rated number 45 out of 50. Israel's like number two. There's a lot of little countries, Estonia, places like that, they have it. And the U.S. is like number 14, but the U.S. is, all the countries that are 1 through 13, their populations aren't as big as the United States,
What is this a rating of? What is this a ranking?
Well, it's a rating of, the speed with which you're getting vaccinations out.
Oh, I see.
Based on 100,000 people.
Yeah.
Okay. And Canada is about 10%. In other words, if you take 100,000 people, then they're at 10,000 of those people would be vaccinated, but 90,000 are not vaccinated.
Right.
And the United States is around 35%, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, I think Gibraltar is number one. I didn't know Gibraltar was a country, but I guess looking at it this way. And Gibraltar is around 98%, which I guess you can do in about 3 days.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody gather at the Rock. Let's go. Come on.
Just offer everybody a drink. You know, everybody a drink and vaccinate.
A shot.
A shot and a shot, yeah.
Right. That's funny.
Yeah. Have you ever been there?
To Gibraltar?
Yeah.
No, I have not. But I know about
I'd like to go.
Gibraltar. I have like a friend who lives in Gibraltar.
Yeah, I'd like to go. It seems like a neat little place, you know, but I haven't been there yet. Are we there? Hello. Mr. Jackson.
There we go. Yeah, my friend that lives in Gibraltar is, so I have a Cloudlandia relationship with him, but I'm always fascinated that now, you know, when you, as I'm thinking through the Cloudlandia welcome, guide, that basically we say, you know, welcome to Cloudlandia. Here's all the things you get. You get your TV station, our network, whatever you want, radio. It's all free to broadcast. You can talk to everybody. You can gather with anybody. And you can live anywhere on the mainland you choose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really, you got to have a place to, you know, get your sandwiches and poop. Mm-hmm. You can't do that in Cloudlandia. So you can pick a place on the mainland to,
breakfast delivery can't be too far away.
Right, exactly. So that's the, but you can literally pick anywhere. And that is just, I was talking with Philip yesterday and we had a really great conversation. Actually, I was asking him about his 21-year-old self. He just turned 13. I was asking if he ever, you know, thought about his 21-year-old self. And I said, what do you think your 21-year-old self would say to you right now if he was looking in on this, you know, and on how you're doing? And he's like, well, I don't know what my 21-year-old self will think. I said, yeah, it's true. You don't know who your 21-year-old self is going to be, but yet, you know, we're creating him every day.
Yeah.
And I was talking about the thing of, you know, your 21-year-old self could be a concert pianist or could be a rock star. But the path to that would mean that you'd have to be playing the piano now, you know, like that's the thing. So it was really an interesting, it was the first time I think he's had that kind of introduction
conversation
to his future self, the concept of his future self, because I think until you're 13 anyway, you're very present minded, right? You're very just whatever's going on right now.
The big difference. So 13 for me was 1957. Mm-hmm. I was 13 years old. And, the big difference that I'm noticing between being 13 in 1957 and being 13 in 2021 is that most of the 13-year-olds I wanted that I knew, including myself, wanted to be an adult. We wanted to be an adult. And it was pretty clear what, in, you know, it was pretty clear what being an adult meant. You know, I mean, there was pretty, I mean, you had role models all around yourself. I think it's difficult being a 13-year-old in 2021 because so many of the adults are trying to be children.
Yeah, I get that. I 100%. Or they're trying to be, they're not moving forward. They're holding
Yeah, and
that,
they're trying to be buddies. They're trying to be buddies with 13-year-olds. You know, I mean, you know, I mean, when I was growing up, one thing, I mean, this is like a first principle of the universe. Your parents weren't friends.
Right.
Your parents were parents, and you liked your parents, and you loved your parents, but they weren't friends, you know.
Right.
And your parents weren't, your parents weren't trying to be friends, you know. They, they weren't trying to be friends with you. They were trying to get you through to adulthood, you know. They, their job is to take children and you know, give them some good direction and good advice and support to be becoming an adult. And I think it's very confusing today. I think it's very confusing, you know, adults having temper tantrums on network TV, you know, getting angry and calling names like you used to when you were 13 years old, you know?
Right.
And my sense is, I think it's confusing for children to kind of figure out exactly what adulthood means.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's funny. I was, you know, I've shared with him the idea of your umbilical cord, you know, looking for somewhere to plug it in. And when you've got your own means of production, you know, you've really got your own, you've solved the big challenge, you know?
Yeah. Here's another thing that I find, might be a bit, unsettling, and it might put, you know, young people really in a gap, is that you have teenagers who are millionaires, you know, teenagers who've just decided to do a business and they're millionaires.
Yeah.
I was reading in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. This is in the, about the you know, the cryptocurrency exchanges that are now popping up. Okay, and there's a guy in Hong Kong. His name is Bateman. 29 years old. He's a billionaire. He's a because of the valuation of the exchanges. His is FTX, I think. Mm-hmm. FTX is the name of the exchange. And I said, you know, he's got some dangers in his life right now. One of them is, will his future ever be bigger than his past? Okay. He's 29 and he's a billionaire. And immediately there's a lineup of 10,000 people who are really going to want to meet him.
Yeah.
Only because he's a billionaire at 29 years old, and do they have an opportunity for him? You know, and so he's, I just read about 2 weeks ago, the very sad last 6 months of Tony Hsieh, who, you know, nominally was kind of a billionaire because that was his buyout from, Amazon gave, but you know, that was used up by law firms and accounting firms and you know, everything else. But he was, you know, he's in his 30s, and what I think he died of is from a lack of a future that was bigger than anything he had done in the past. I think people die from you know, you got everything in the world except the future.
Yeah,
and you're not sure of your friends. Why do people love you? Well, you have some suspicions that it's not really about you.
Yeah. Did you ever meet Tony?
No, I never did.
Okay.
I don't think he was never a genius. He was never a genius, was he?
No, he wasn't. But he was.
No.
You know,
Joe
knew him. Eben knew him. I met him with Eben a couple of times. But yeah, I mean, at the time it was just like a, you know, super guy, introvert, very introvert.
But
you want, it, there's something to that, I think.
Well, he made his money. I mean, he made his money on early stages of Cloudlandia, really. I mean, when you think about how he made his money, I mean, that's Amazon is totally a Cloudlandia, you know. What creates their growth is Cloudlandia, and then they deliver on the planet. You know, they have good services on the mainland. So they put two things together. They put together good mainland organization together with virtually almost unlimited Cloudlandia opportunity.
Yeah. This is just, I mean,
but the last 6 months, I mean, the article in the Wall Street Journal on Tony Hsieh.
Yeah.
And looked like a slow motion suicide to me. That every week it got a little bit worse. And and he was almost not communicating with anyone outside of a tight circle.
That was the sense I got, that the people around him really kind of were complicit in it all, you know?
I have lights during the summertime, and and there's a lot of bugs around the light, you know.
right.
I think that happens with charismatic, wealthy people. A lot of bugs.
Yeah.
A lot of bugs.
Yeah. Circle. Yeah. That whole. This whole. I'm just kind of thinking about the. You said something about our understanding of life before Cloudlandia. Is part of the adaptiveness that we've had to it. And you wonder, you think like the kids coming up now, they've got no other frame of reference for it. No other, you know, like I think I remember looking through my childhood, I was shaped through the lens of being growing up in suburban Toronto in the 70s and 80s. And that, was filtered through the Canadian lens and the local media lens. We didn't have access to global or independent perspectives. And now it's like you couldn't, the last place people look are the local, the local news that you're, at 6 o'clock or whatever. Who's watching that now?
No, you wouldn't know anything about the old gated community if you didn't talk to me every Sunday.
Right, exactly.
I'm your local reporter.
Yeah. But even that, even within Ontario, you could live in there's no difference in your access or your capability at your cottage 3 hours away or at your house in the city.
No, I mean, what I watch at the cottage is exactly what I watch when I'm here.
You've got that access.
I've got all my sites that I go to. I mean, we got really, really good internet. Plus, we've got benefit of Elon Musk's satellites now that unusually favor southern Ontario. We're really a long way north from Toronto, but we're still considered southern Ontario because Ontario is so big. But apparently we're right in the, sweet spot of those satellites going over. And so apparently if you wanted to, I got what I need. We've got really good Bell, Bell Canada, and it's really good.
Right.
The service is really good. And they've got a local, a local person who does all their service calls and everything else, and he's real good. He gets over there really fast, and so it's great. Yeah, and But you know, when I was a kid, I was a radio nut, and the big thing at nighttime on AM radio, you can get 500 miles away. I remember one night, and this is Northern Ohio, so this is Cleveland. One night, I'm getting a big station in New York City. I'm getting a big station in Chicago, St. Louis, Atlanta, and New Orleans. I got New Orleans one night.
Wow.
It's just crystal clear. And I had this amazing sense of being connected, you know, of these places, you know, a small farm town that I grew up in. And, but at nighttime, I could, you know, I could just connect. And I had a feeling of being connected to those places.
Right.
You know? And that's, you know, and this is like 1951, maybe 50-51. And, you know, and everything else. And it was a real thrill to me because usually you get a lot of static, you know, and can't do anything. And, you know, you can only get local during the day. But when the sun goes down, all of a sudden a lot, and you get a lot better reception. And there was an FM, right? There was no FM radio in those days. So you just had AM.
Yeah, that's, it's so funny when you're like, you and I, you know, you're describing something that those were sort of local worlds that was almost like different, if you think about them, as the, you know, the radius of the reach of that local radio station. If you're saying 500 miles is the outer ring.
Yeah, 60 is probably 60 during the day. That was your maximum.
Right.
You know. And they had they brought in some rules that you couldn't blast everybody off the air. You couldn't have at first there was no restrictions on how powerful a radio station could be, you know. But you just blast. So finally they said, you know, this isn't fair. So they restricted it down to, you know, there was a, you know, an upper limit, and then that became that you were the 150,000 watt station, you know, in a certain area, and they restricted it to certain radio stations.
Yeah, I
got it. Tim Wu talks about all this stuff in his book, The Master Switch, and he said that, he gives a complete history of radio and how radio grew up, and then it became monopolized, and NBC was the big player. This was a huge player, national player. And then, you know, then you, in the telephone, you had AT&T for 70 years. They had a monopoly. Mm-hmm. And then you had Hollywood was down to six studios.
Mm.
So he was talking about all these. They all started off with thousands of players, and then they got down to just a handful of players in every one of them. And then they started linking up with each other, like AT&T and NBC would link up with each other. And, you know, and it was very interesting. He was saying that the Bell, which is AT&T, had call recorders in the 1930s. Bell Labs had recorded call recorders. You could leave a message. And they said, no, this is a threat. This is a threat to our telephone. So they didn't allow actual leaving a message on a voice recorder. It was possible technologically in the 1930s, but AT&T killed it as an innovation until the 1970s.
Wow. Yeah, that's something.
It was Nixon. Nixon said, you know, he said, we're getting to the point where AT&T is the biggest obstacle to the progress of the U.S. economy. And he just went after AT&T, and they broke up AT&T. And he said, and Tim Wu said it was the breakup of AT&T that created the internet.
Oh, interesting. So does he propose that that's where we are now? Sort of with
he says we're about
Google, Facebook.
He said we wouldn't be where they were if there is. It would be Google running everything. What Facebook does, Google does that. What Apple does, Google does
that.
That's what AT&T had. They had a total monopoly. It's the greatest information monopoly in the history of the world. And, wow. You know, we hope it doesn't come back.
Right.
Yeah, but he said it was the breaking up of AT&T that released a lot of talent and innovation out into the marketplace. And yeah. AT&T could no longer forbid anything attached to the telephone system. You could attach anything you wanted to the telephone system. And,
okay.
And a lot of people had cordless. There were cordless innovations, but AT&T says, no, we have to have a lineman come in and install your telephone to guarantee absolute quality.
Okay. Right.
And
right.
They wanted to know why you wanted two phones in your house. Why do you need two phones in your house? What are you doing with the second phone? Yeah.
Yeah, 'cause I remember they used to rent the phones to you or whatever. Yeah, they owned the phones. Yeah.
They owned the phones. They owned everything. And yeah. you couldn't have any repairman except their repairman.
Right.
It was 70 years. So when people talk about the tyranny.
I still remember the day our kitchen, our phone came off the kitchen wall and it became now movable with a long cord. That freedom to go outside of the kitchen into the living room or wherever. I mean,
well, I remember when our phone went to where you would have one thing at your ear and the other end of the thing on your mouth. We had the old phone. You put it on your ear and you had to speak. You had to pick
into
up
into the phone. Oh yeah,
set and talk mm-hmm. into it. And there was no dial.
Wow.
You just picked it up and an operator would answer. And we were on a party line. You know, like you're on a party line. And when you got on, you could hear the other clicks that people were listening into on your phone call. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Yeah. And
funny.
You know, and at a certain point, people want their privacy back, and they want it for their use. So, but he thinks that we're kind of in. If you use AT&T's 70-year rule, he said we're kind of like right now we're like 30 years into AT&T's rule to compare it to the internet.
Wow.
Things are remarkably free right now.
Yeah. I feel like we're in the generation that is the Mayflower of Cloudlandia, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And he said the one thing they learned from AT&T is that you can't forbid innovation.
Yeah.
You can't have somebody stopping innovation.
Right.
You know, and he said that the reason why the internet works so well is that you can build your company on somebody else's platform.
Yeah. Well, it's overwhelming how much, how wonderful it is to be at this moment in time and be who we are right now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good time
I feel enormously wealthy with capability and more so over the last 12 months. I mean, my sense of the reach has gone through the roof, easily 10 times greater reach than we had a year ago. And that's funny. We had a really good call with Joe yesterday, Joe Polish. And I just want to tell you this because he's using his year for different purposes, but one of them, he's really finding everything he can about cryptocurrency. Uh-huh. And he may have talked to you about this. And he was talking about a new thing called BitClout. You know about BitClout? Yeah. And you know, he was sending us videos and talking to it. And you know how Joe gets really excited.
Yeah.
You get excited too because he's very vivid in describing it. And anyway, when we Babs and I were off the call, I said, what's the most exciting thing in our future? And Babs says, next registration in the strategic coach.
That's true.
But we can speed it up. You know, we can speed that up. But,
yeah.
You know, we're pretty clear in how we measure progress, and it's people signing up for coach and staying in coach. You know, everything else is kind of a bonus, you know,
yeah.
Like new capabilities. But you gotta stay focused on, you know.
Amen.
All
that's
the
it.
Things
that I mean, those whole
make you feel like you're successful.
Yeah, I'm going to revisit my, I'm not at the point I'm ready to give up TV yet, because there's things that I really do enjoy watching, but I'm certainly paying attention right now and
I think I'm
a lot of it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do a series of videos, just what my experience was, and just sort of share my experience. You know, what I found about getting time back from something I had never really given much thought before, because you know, it was something that I was doing for 65 years.
Yeah.
And I never gave any thought to it. And I said, I wonder what would I do differently if I got all that time back? And I'm starting to see that. And it's reading. It's really reading. I mean, I'm just pouring things into reading. And I've got the experience that reading was a much more powerful and transformative experience than television was. So I had gone through the reading transformation before television. So television had to kind of wait in line a little bit, because I was such a reader.
Your first love.
And
of course,
getting
that's
the
your
whole
time
back.
That was your university experience, too.
Yeah. And I've gone back to my first love a lot. And the other thing is that, you know, I really feel a lot of slack in my schedule as a result of the past year. And I said, I'm not giving it back. I'm not going back to being tightly scheduled again.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got so much slack. That's the great thing.
Yeah.
And I guarded myself to keep that slack.
Yep.
Because I viewed that slack as the ultimate definition of success for me.
Yep.
Yeah. Time freedom.
Anyway.
Well,
was
Dan.
It a good one?
Yeah, I always enjoy. It really was. I'm going to give some more thought to the welcome kit, because I think there's something good there. But putting it all into perspective.
Immediately after we sign off here, I'm just going to go up and send you the Tim Wu YouTube video. And and he's charming. He's just got a real charming quality about him, that he's just so excited that he's able to think about these things and share what he's sharing, you know. But it's at Harvard bookstore in Cambridge, I guess, Cambridge. And so when you get it, skip the first minute and 20 seconds.
Okay.
Because that's the introduction, and the woman listening to her is like listening to fingernails on a blackboard.
I gotcha. Thank you for that.
Yeah, so you just
perfect.
You just go to the 120 mark, and then he's good. But he's very lucid, and he just gives you a lot of context, and you don't have any sense of that he's got a bone to pick or anything like that. He's just saying, he said, I was just wondering whether what we think is so unique today has happened before. And he says, I've gone back and found four or five instances that look a lot like what's happening today. So I'd just like to tell you what I've learned from the previous examples that might be useful for understanding what's going on today.
I love it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All right.
Okay. I will talk to you next time.